every choice you've ever made, every path you've ever taken. The man you are today is your memory of Euros.
I know this is difficult, but you've got to keep it together.
Hi and welcome to You Podcast. My name is Asim Verney and I'm joined with my regular co-hosts,
Martin
and Ahmed.
And we have our good friend Sujoy with us. Hey Sujoy.
Hello everyone.
So happy to have you on the podcast, man. It's been ages.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. The final episode of Sherlock, yeah.
Yeah, we had to go out with a bang, so we brought Sujoy in.
Yeah.
I hope that's a bang for a lot of people, not like a fizzle or something.
Hope so.
I just invite Sujoy over to break his balls, and then like Ahmed is like, "Whoo, it's not me. Somebody else. Austin's breaking somebody else's balls now." No, I love you guys. I got much love for you. I just haven't slept too much. But anyway, guys, so we're talking about the final Sherlock episode of this season, and it might be the final episode ever. Who knows?
Yeah.
The final problem, it's called, so it kind of, the name kind of gives it away. So yeah, we'll be talking about that, but let's just, Sujoy, so you saw a movie, maybe we can talk a bit about that too quickly, just give your general thoughts. You saw Live by Night, right? The new movie directed by Ben Affleck?
Ben Affleck, yeah. It's a nod to the old gangster noir movies of the yesteryears, and Ben Affleck's passion project for many years. But I think it does that well. It creates a period well. It has lots of intriguing characters, the Italian mafia, the Irish mafia, and all of that in Boston as well as in Tampa. It's got great action scenes. But overall, the movie, it has a lot of drag, and it kind of tries to sum it up with a really glamorous gangster showdown, but overall it just doesn't come out as a very good movie as a whole. I enjoyed it, but probably I would have enjoyed it more if I was in the right kind of mood. But yeah, but I mean, it's not as good as Ben Affleck's previous ventures, I suppose.
Yeah, we were just talking about the law of diminishing returns with his movies, that every movie has been like slightly less good at the previous one. But he kind of knocked it out of the park with the first one, right? So,
yeah.
Maybe he should direct and not star in it. What do you think, Sujoy? Do you think that might be an issue? Because I like Ben Affleck, just to kind of like a lot of people, there was a lot of time there was like a decade, he had like a decade full of hate that people were just hating on him. I always liked the guy, so I was excited that he was directing. He was so good, and he was kind of, we were seeing more of him. But I don't know, do you think maybe because Gone Baby Gone, right? That and Gone Girl, I always confuse those two. That was kind of his best one, and maybe just focusing on directing and having somebody else star, maybe that was something, I don't know.
I think, I don't know. He is definitely, like, a great writer. Which movie did he win the Oscar for? The first Oscar Argo. With Matt Damon?
Goodwill
Hunting.
Goodwill Hunting. And like, he's always been like good with writing. I think, I don't know, maybe, yeah, if he's directing as well as acting in it, I think that takes away something out of the movie. I don't know. There was this Graham Norton episode where he was there to promote this movie, and they were making fun of how many sex scenes he had written into this movie for himself. Maybe there's a perk to that.
Who's he sex-scening with?
Gomorrah, what's her name?
Oh, Zoe Saldana.
Yes, her. And there's another woman, what's her name? Can't remember.
Okay. We should have pulled IMDb, but yeah, I jumped this on. Yeah, I jumped this on.
Elle Fanning. Oh, no, right. No, not Elle Fanning. Shit.
Dakota Fanning.
No, Sienna Miller.
Oh, yeah. China Miller.
Yeah. Shining.
Okay, so you recommend it, or it's like just catch it at home when it comes out?
I mean, yeah, catch it at home when it comes on TV or something, or Netflix.
Yeah, cool. Okay, and I saw La La Land, which I know, Sujoy, you also saw, which is getting a lot of buzz throughout the year. Martin and Ahmed, you haven't seen La La Land, have
No,
you?
I just checked out the trailer when you said to me, you're going to check it out in the cinema.
Yeah, and I know, Martin, you had very strong feelings about not watching it. So I know you were not planning to watch it, but yeah.
Oh, there's hope, hold on.
Go. Unleash, yeah.
we lost it,
Martin. We just got the groan. Does that groan say enough?
Well, yeah. it's bright. It's bright and colourful and musical. It's just like, really, you're not selling it to me like that.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen Whiplash.
Yeah, oh, I think. Yeah, I think Whiplash.
So for me, it's got really nothing going for it right now.
Yeah. You should watch Whiplash. I think you'd really like it. I call it like Rocky, but with drumming. And it's on Netflix UK now, so you can definitely just like add it to your queue or whatever. It's a good watch.
Okay.
But so I was kind of looking forward to it, but the hype was really getting to me. And what I really felt is that I think I tweeted this like a couple of months ago when the movie came out, and I still stand by it. There were a lot of people that were like, oh, it feels so good to see people dancing and singing again in movies and like musicals and stuff like that. And my thought was like, there's a whole industry that makes more movies than Hollywood, where there's enough singing and dancing going on. There's subtitles. The only difference is the people are brown, so get over it and watch some fucking Bollywood, you know? So, and I actually engaged even with a few critics about it, that, and they kind of, and people that I kind of trust, and they mentioned, oh, it's not really like Bollywood, it harkens back to old school Hollywood musicals like Fred Astaire and all that kind of stuff. So I was like, okay, maybe I'm wrong, maybe my assumption is wrong. And then it came out in, like, because I watched it quite late, I think it came out in India, so a lot of Indian critics were also kind of raving about it, how amazing it was, and how Bollywood can learn so much about it, like having songs situationally and not just haphazardly like Bollywood does. And so that got my engines riling again, because I was like, what the fuck, man? Stop dissing Bollywood. So I went in with, like, armed, you know? Like, I had my guard up like a boxer. But Emma Stone really bloody charmed the hell out of me. I mean, she is amazing. Like, I've always loved seeing her. And, like, she, so much is demanded from her, you know? Like, pretty intense performance, comedy, goofiness, pathos, dancing, singing. And she does it, like, all exceptionally well, I felt. So that was, like, the major, major point for me. But and I kind of like the story to a certain degree. I kind of like the whimsy of it. But in terms of choreography, visuals, even just the overall storyline of kind of lovers that don't end up meeting or whatever, I just felt that was kind of subpar. And I've seen it better, and I've seen it done so many other times, you know. So that was kind of like, I just felt like my main point was that these people don't seem to give a shit about their relationship, so why should we care about these people, you know? So that I kind of, like, walking out, I was like, huh, I don't think this is kind of deserves to be raved at as, you know, the best movie of the year or win the Oscar or anything like that. And it definitely, Bollywood definitely does not need to learn anything from La La Land, because we've already done it better. Go watch Om Shanti Om. It has Shah Rukh Khan and Deepika freaking Padukone in it, man. So, yeah. And it also deals with, like, nostalgia and the magic of cinema, and it has this amazing choreography and decor and set pieces and visuals. And I think they're all way, way, way beyond anything La La Land offers. But Sujoy, what did you think? I know you liked it slightly more than I did, right?
I think so, from what I'm hearing from you. But I think it does deserve all the attention and love that it is getting. Maybe not in a way that it needs to diss at Bollywood, or people are saying that Bollywood should learn from it, but it has a lot of heart in it. as you said, Emma Stone just emotes the freaking hell out of her eyes. The heartbreak, the happiness, everything is to the point, you know. And her chemistry with Ryan Gosling is just perfect. I think they have been casted well. They have performed their all that is demanded of them for these roles of being a jazz singer or an aspiring artist, the struggles that they need to go through for all of this, and also the personal love story that these two characters go on. I think it all comes together really perfectly alongside all the music that is happening throughout the movie. It just stayed with me after the movie. I've watched this movie twice at the cinema now. Wow. I really liked it. Yeah. Mm.
Mm. Yeah.
But and to be honest, like, I'm not a big fan of musicals or Hollywood musicals. I didn't grow up on, like, I haven't seen Singing in the Rain or Sound of Music, or, you know, I didn't grow up on those. And this, so as
I,
a
neither
genre,
did I.
Yeah, this as a genre is kind of like quite alien to me, to see you know, white people dance and sing. But
it's all about the shoes, isn't it? With their dancing, it's a lot of effort on shoes.
Tap dancing, yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised about the shoes.
I really, really enjoyed it, and but I'm not sure if it's the best movie of 2016.
Mm. Yeah, I just felt Ryan Gosling was kind of one note as a character. Like, I didn't see much in the guy, like, in general. Like, I just didn't feel anything, and I definitely didn't feel like this was this massive grand love story or anything like that. Like, so, yeah, but we don't want to go into a full review. I just want to kind of give my thoughts on it and get Sujoy's. But let's move on to our main segment, is the review of Sherlock. That was the final problem, and how should we do this? Maybe start with general thoughts. So, John, let's start with your general thoughts about how has the season been for you up until now. I assume you're a big Sherlock fan, like we all are, right?
I can't really say if I'm a big Sherlock fan, but I definitely look forward to whenever it's on BBC, right? Because it has been kind of I've not grown up reading all the books, but I've had like a couple of stories here and there, and I've seen certain adaptations as well as Robert Downey Jr.'s movies. But I've really, since I saw the first episode, A Study in Pink, and that was kind of groundbreaking in how it presented the whole Sherlock story, which was originally set, I don't know, in the Victorian period. It brought that into the modern day and age. I've not been a big fan, that's where I'm getting at. But I've always liked Benedict Cumberbatch as Sherlock and Martin Freeman as John Watson. This season, however, started on quite a wrong footing, kind of. It just felt off for me. The first episode, the second episode picked up, and I thought arguably this was one of the best episodes of Sherlock ever, across all seasons and the Christmas special. The final episode, again, it had way too many things to juggle with, and it got some of them correct, and I quite liked it, but there were quite a lot of things that irked me a lot. So overall, it was okay whilst I was watching, but when I go back and think more and more about it, it just troubles me a lot about what happened.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Ahmed, man, what about you? What about your thoughts on this episode?
On this episode, it was a little bit too much. Like, there were so many things happening at the same time, just distracting you, throwing you from here to there to this to that. But for me personally, when I saw that, the only thing I would say is that it shouldn't be called the final problem. And I'm not only saying that as a joke, but this should be called Arkham's first visit.
Yeah.
There was so goddamn Batman essence in this episode. Yeah. It was ridiculous. ridiculous. Like, you know, but we'll get that into later on, and I'll give you guys my perspective in it, and let's see how wrong or off or right I am. I liked it. I like how they try to tie everything, finalize everything, end everything, but I also had one major disappointment in it, to be honest.
We can talk about that in the spoiler section, maybe. Martin, man, what about you? And also, like, how do you feel just generally as this being kind of the final episode of the series? Do you feel it's kind of a chapter closing, or it's kind of a good ending to the adventures up till now?
End of the series, I feel it's the end of it all.
Yeah. I agree with you, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a good ride, but it's time to get off. Yeah. Feel a bit sick now because I've been on the roller coaster too long.
Slight nausea.
I just feel a bit pukey. I think there are things that are contributing to my feeling that are out of the control of the producers and the actors, and I think we mentioned this after the first episode, that Martin Freeman and Benedict Cumberbatch, they're so successful now outside of the UK, you know, internationally.
Yeah.
He's in Marvel films, Crumb Snatcher is off doing whatever he wants,
snatching
playing
crumbs,
code-breaking people, or snatching crumbs, or doing whatever. And I think if you're going to shift towards big long character arcs, and you're going to shift the emphasis away from episodes, from the episodes being about the story that's self-contained within that 90 minutes, and if you make it about longer character development and longer this and longer that, but if you're only doing three episodes in a series, and if the series is 18 months apart, then those big long character things, for me, that's where it started losing it for me. And it's because of the irregularity and the you know, if you had sort of like eight episodes of an hour and it was every year, then yeah, you can do these things because it's fresher in people's heads and all the rest of it. So it doesn't have to be the end. For me, it felt like the very end. And I just hope if they do bring it back, that they just do it story by story. You've got brilliant stories that don't need these big, long sort of like character developments and things. I think all the character development's been done. I mean, Watson has evolved so much that he's lost his bloody wife.
Yeah.
So... Oh, no, that was in episode two, dude. That's fine. Oh, yeah. No, sorry, that was a spoiler alert for episode two. What was episode one even? Anyway, you see what's happened to me? I've lost my mind. I've lost my mind and I'm not even on the heroin.
Yeah, I think my problem is just that I just feel conned as an audience member.
In what sense?
When it started, Sherlock, and like Sujoy mentioned, you know, like, it was like this new way, and it was very, I almost felt it was like intellectual, like there was a very, like Sherlock was very smart, and the show was very smart. But then, slowly it started to feel that the showrunners are kind of just pulling a trick on us, and it started coming when, after the death of, you know, Sherlock and Moriarty, that episode, the first one, I was like, okay, I think they pulled a fast one on us there, and more they were pulling more fast ones on us, and it also seemed that whenever they ended up kind of on a cliffhanger or a big reveal, the next episode would make that reveal or that cliffhanger completely inconsequential. And even this episode, where the last episode ended with a gunshot, where you're speculating that, you know, what's his name, Martin Freeman's character, Watson, is dead maybe, right? And then it doesn't stop with that at all, and then they just kind of give a one-line explanation about what happened. Oh, she shot me with a tranquilizer dart, and that's it. And that just felt like, what the fuck, man? Like, you know, it, it's it had no, you know, or continue where the cliffhanger was, or, you know, give me a decent explanation. And they've done this a few times, I feel. They've done this with the Reichenbach Falls episode where Sherlock died, you know. Then they did the same thing, I felt, with the death of Mary, where everybody was kind of over it quite quickly. Like, especially now in this episode, it feels like Mary died like a decade ago. There's, like, almost no mention up until the end of it. And there's, like, Sherlock was a junkie in last episode. Like, he was on heroin, right? He almost died. And here he's, like, fully Botoxed, like, he's face is all sleek. I was like, what's going on here? So I just felt like it became like kind of a very, like, you know, the showrunners are just pulling a fast one on the audience, and I just kind of stopped caring, and I'm glad they're done. I do feel that I'm happy that the performers are still on board and they give it their all. It's not like Daniel Craig in Spectre where he just does not give a shit and he's just like totally over it, you know. The performances are still ace, and it's really cool to see all these people and kind of tie it together. But like, again, like Sujoy said, I was rewatching the episode and man, it does not make any sense. It does not make any bloody sense, man. And that is just, that's just kind of a shame for me, at least. Yeah.
Anyway. More than that, like, when way too many things are happening and one thing jumps from one, you know, from one place to another, from point A to B, to C to Z, you kind of lose track and you're trying to play catch up. Yeah. And because the Sherlock being Sherlock, he's high or whatever, or he's not high, but he's super intellectual, super intelligent, so he's trying to figure out stuff, and Benedict Cumberbatch is mumbling. I kind of give up. I just don't want to participate in that catch and, you know, in catching up. So you just, you lose the audience.
And I think that's what, in the first few episodes, when they used to do this, it used to go really fast, and then when you rewatched it, you were like, this is where they laid the idea for that, and then it pays off. But if you rewatch these new episodes, it bloody doesn't make any sense. You're like, what? I've watched it pretty much every episode I've rewatched, and none of it makes any sense. This episode makes no sense whatsoever.
The first season of Sherlock, I did want to go back and watch it, but now, even though I have missed so many things, I don't want to go back and watch it because I think that the returns would be really... Yeah. I wouldn't get nothing out of it, you know?
Yeah. No, I feel the first season still holds up, I feel. Things start to go downhill after the Reichenbach Falls episode, I feel. But even this, like, for example, the show starts, to get into the episode itself, it starts with this cold open, which is really creepy, and it's an amazing set piece. Again, like, there's a plane, everybody's fallen asleep except for this little girl, and she's kind of trying to wake up her mom. She sees the pilot is unconscious, she picks up a phone that's ringing, and then we hear Jim Moriarty's voice saying, "Welcome to the final problem." And that's kind of credits. So, again, we'll get into this later on. There's no reason why Jim Moriarty's voice should be there. Right?
No.
There's no reason, right?
Who is hearing all this? I mean, that particular scene of that girl.
Yeah.
Who is...
Yeah.
Whose perspective is that whole vision?
Yeah. So again, I mean, we'll need to get into spoilers to maybe get into it, but So I think, but as a scene, like as a independent segment scene, I think it was amazing. It was amazingly that little girl is amazing. She had a little bit of, I felt, Veruca Salt of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I think if they're ever doing a new version, they should get that girl. She really looked like that, but sweeter. And it's really damn creepy, man. Just that thought of everybody being unconscious and what was she, like 6 years old, 7 years old? It just freaks me out, man. Again, this is the father in me talking, but
this is what ruined the episode for you in reality.
It didn't ruin it. It got me on board, but because the payoff was so bad, that's what annoyed me afterward, right? So, yeah. But these are very classic horror movie tropes, right? Like, even, like, Ahmed, man, you're probably the biggest horror fan out of all of us. Like, even the Mycroft, how he's... Because that's the next scene, you know? He's watching a movie, yeah. And then he gets chased by a clown. I mean, these are two horror movie tropes mixed together, right? So, did they work for you?
No, not really. Like the plain one just really irritated me and got me on edge. But the clown one, when I saw that, I was like, the fuck am I watching now? Like, you know, I was like really now? The fuck is happening? Like, but okay, let's ride it through. That was the main thing. Like, I had to power through the show a couple of times. That episode, but yeah.
Yeah. So, what happens then?
Is there anyone out of us four who likes the episode?
No, don't get me wrong. I really do like the episode. It just I got disappointed with two major thing. Well, with one major arc story to it, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. Tell
us. It's really not spoilers.
Yeah. Go into which.
No, I was gonna say it's not really that much spoilers, but in reality, I really got pissed that they took the Moriarty chapter from me. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, I just didn't appreciate that towards the end, that it was just he was manipulated over 5 years ago and it wasn't him at all who's doing shit. At least that's how I perceived it. And I was like, dude, why are you taking away from me Moriarty and adding it with like an X-Men kind of character, you know, Urius? You know, it just pissed me the fuck off. Yeah. Like, you should have had Urius alone. And you should have had Moriarty alone. I would have been a very fucking happy puppy. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, it felt...
That was my disappointment with it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, take Moriarty from me, that just, like, was just so wrong, and how they kept confirming that he's dead over and over and over. I was like, dude, like, that's, like, the best fucking thing in that show, honestly.
Yeah, they didn't get me, though, man. Like, because we were watching it, we were WhatsApping it to each other when we were watching it, and, like, I was like, fuck! That's the only thing I said.
I screamed that out loud. I scared my wife, dude.
when he reappears?
Yeah, when he reappears.
Yeah. I was like, whoa, what the fuck happened?
Yeah, that was pretty awesome, man. Yeah.
That was the only moment when I went, like, whoa, you know?
Yeah.
The second big reveal, I was like, oh, I don't care.
What was the second thing, Ahmed, that bugged you in the episode?
No, I said that's the mainly arc thing in the story, that they just took everything together and that was it. Like, I just wanted a bit of separation. I didn't want you to cross over these two things at all.
Yeah.
Like, that was my main concern, and that was what really ticked me off, honestly.
It kind of...
But I think it's because I thought it was overkill.
And it
pushed my limits of believability as well.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of that in this episode. Like, what is Urus not capable of?
But also, I mean, see, if somebody's that good, like, why are you fucking dicking around with Moriarty anyway?
Yeah.
And Moriarty's supposed to be one of the most brilliant people of all time. How is he so easily swayed by somebody speaking for 5 minutes?
Yeah, for 5 minutes. And also just the fact that if she's in charge of the prison anyway, and she has been for a while, why is she, like, the only appearance she made was the one? None of it makes sense. Like, none of it makes sense. When you start looking at it, none of it makes sense. Getting a bit further, so they have the whole clown chasing sequence with the Mycroft, where this is a whole thing put into place to let us know that Sherlock now knows that he has a sister, and then secondly that Watson wasn't killed by her. Which again annoys me, and he has this little thing where he says, "Yeah, you need to come to our place, to 221 Baker Street, to talk about it." And then that's kind of the next scene. I don't understand why they can't have the conversation there immediately, but it's again just to set the next action set piece, which is the one with the drone. I did like Mrs. Hudson's little crack about the teapot or making the tea. That was kind of funny.
I also like her
sardonic, like, put down. Yeah.
I liked her hoovering to Iron Maiden.
Yeah, that also did it for me, actually.
Yeah,
I was like, that's so funny.
She's the standout character of this season.
Yeah, see, my thing was I didn't even know it's Iron Maiden, so I just put random hard rock. She's listening to random guitar music.
Yeah. She's listening to The Number of the Beast by Iron Maiden.
Yeah, six.
Okay, good. So, so it's pretty much an exposition scene, kinda. Like, it doesn't make any sense, and I'll keep saying that until it annoys everybody listening, because it annoyed the crap out of me. Because Mycroft exposes and explains kind of the story, what happened, but he still hides a lot of things, and he doesn't come out clear, because they're kind of setting up the next reveal, where, again, it's not needed, you know? We could have still ramped up a lot of the things when you knew what kind of badass you were going to meet, you know? You could, like, really ramp up the dread. Like, this girl killed somebody when she was 8 years old or whatever, 7 years old, you know? That is a scary thought, and it kind of makes sense why she's in this solitary confinement. But there's this whole thing about flashbacks and a dog that doesn't even pay off, and, like, yeah. So then kind of a drone comes in suddenly, right? And then the drone explodes because it has some sort of grenade on it, and they jump out of the window and nobody's hair gets burnt.
They're pirates suddenly.
How did that kind of work for you guys? What about the whole scene? Martin, man, I was kind of really getting annoyed at that time. Because it was ramping up. I wasn't there yet, but I was like, man, this is pissing me off. Well, what about you, man?
Is what I would say. the thing is, Anson, if you keep going down these lines, you're going to make me come out and, like, hate the bloody thing.
I know.
And I don't want to do that. Yeah. So you've got to stop. I watched Kelly's Heroes at Christmas. Stop spreading negative vibes, man. It's not good.
Oh, God, dude. I'm so frustrated with this episode. I was trying to keep it in check, but it's very hard.
No, your cynicism is, like, spreading like wildfire, and now I'm going to be contaminated with it. No, it was cool. It was fine. It was just kind of like a filler scene that kind of didn't really need to be there.
Yeah, yeah.
How bad was the CG, though?
It wasn't very good, was it?
The explosion, you mean?
Yeah. It was so bad.
Yeah, nobody's hair got burned, man. That's what the bald man is saying. that's what's important here.
I honestly didn't even connect that, dude. Like,
bald men, no, man. Martin noticed. I know that.
We gotta stay together, brother.
fight the follicle power. Then they're on a fishing boat, and I did like the whole visuals, how they set up and how Sheringford, and I think that's what you mentioned about Arkham Asylum. It had a very kind of a. Mm-hmm. I was thinking of Silence of the Lambs already at that point.
I was thinking of Saw.
I've only seen one Saw, the first one. I have not seen that many, so it wasn't a thing that I thought about. But it's a thing that, you know, the impenetrable fortress is something we've seen in so many, Inception, be it Lockout or whatever, you know. Like, I'm giving the best examples of Lockout, you know.
Which one was fucking Lockout?
the space jail movie?
When you have to explain the film, like, just let go at this point, like, you know.
No, the one with space.
A more apt and yet terrible example would be the film with Sly Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger, Escape Plan.
There's enough of them. There's even, like, parts of Face Off, right? That has a bit of that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
and Eurus has a makeup that resembles the girl from Ringu.
She does, yeah.
Yes, that's what I thought that as well. I thought that.
So a lot of references, and I was reading an interview with, I think, Stephen Moffat, and he was kind of saying that, I didn't know, I've never seen a Saw movie. It was all the production designer that kind of did all these things. So they definitely kind of picked from a lot of different places, I feel. So anyway, we're on David Brent's mate's fishing boat, and they're kind of going towards Sherrinford. Mm-hmm. There's this whole kind of heist sequence that was kind of very transparent, I felt, what was going on there. Art Mullick shows up, which is kind of cool.
I like that guy, dude.
Yeah, I really like him, too. I've seen, like, two things with him recently. Like, he was in a Bollywood movie. He was terribly miscast, but he was really... I thought he was fun.
I thought he was horribly cast.
Yeah, I'm saying he was terribly miscast. Like, he got cast in a Bollywood, and it felt he'd never seen a Bollywood movie. Like, he just, like, turned it up to 15, and, like, all the Bollywood actors, like, what are you doing, dude? Why are you falling over? What's happening here? It was hilarious.
Of course he was. Listen to how he sounds. Do you think he's ever seen a Bollywood in his life?
So the Bollywood he had to do in Urdu, right? So in Hindi. So even his Hindi and his Urdu was like terrible. It was like, why did they get this guy? But it was a movie.
And he actually has like a monologue where he is. So in his character and his daughter. In that movie, they kind of share Shakespeare quotes, and one of the scenes, he goes completely like monologue et tu Brutus, and it just looks horrible.
It does not gel at all. But I do like him. I like how he speaks and all. So I was kind of excited to kind of see him on screen here. But the moment where he gives his car to the guard who's hiding his face. That's the point where I was like, okay, this episode is going to be nonsense. Like, this is not gonna pay off in any satisfactory way. So I knew at that point, but I had a little. So I was like, okay, I'll just like focus on the positives. And I did like Mark Gatiss's makeup because it felt like a callback to League of Gentlemen. I was like, this is an ordinary prison for ordinary local prison for local people, you know. There's nothing for you here. Have you guys ever seen League of Gentlemen, Sujay?
No, I haven't.
Dude, I have, yeah.
You should get it, man. Like, try to find it. It's still an ace show. It's the kind of show they don't make anymore, and they used to be really... That's why I used to watch BBC Comedy, and I don't feel they make that anymore, unfortunately. Do they, Martin? Is there anything like that out there anymore? Like, because I just don't watch it anymore.
Well, like the League of Gentlemen.
Yeah, like that kind of like absurdist sketch, dark kind of comedy. Like, there's no dark comedy on BBC anymore, I feel.
There's no appetite for it, I think. That would be my...
Times are dark enough as they are.
Seriously. Yeah. So...
Yeah. So anyway, Mycroft takes off his makeup and he just makes Art Malik his bitch. I did love that scene, man. I love that scene. So they go full on Silence of the Lambs here. Art Malik is pretty much Chilton, and Sherlock finally faces off with Eurus, who's in a glass cage. Glass cage audio podcast. Yeah. I'm making funny ears. Yeah, I think that was kind of the first reveal, right? And I loved that reveal, though.
I didn't see that coming at all.
I did not see that coming. And I'm one that I kind of pride myself on seeing things coming. I did not see it. But first, to be positive, Martin, what did you think about that reveal?
Which reveal?
That there is no glass, basically. And also, I mean, also...
Oh, that was a dumb thing. That was totally dumb.
I was trying to be positive. Okay, go ahead.
It was just silly.
Yeah.
Like, how is anybody supposed to believe that that's possible?
How are the stickers like suspended in air? Like, how does that work?
That's a nonsense. That's a total nonsense.
And what the fuck is a throat mic? What is a throat mic? Can somebody explain what the fuck a throat mic is? Like, what is that?
I don't know, but we need one for our show.
Yeah, what the fuck is a throat mic? It's not like you know, they have that thing in Face Off where they put like a little scotch tape on the throat and it changes their voice. That was Face Off, right?
That was just impossible, right?
Yeah, see,
same director.
I reference all the classy movies like Lockout and Face Off. Yeah, yeah. there's no fucking good thing here, man. No French classics or whatever.
No Scorsese.
Yeah, Scorsese might, but no, none of the old school guys. No Swedish shit. So what about you, man? Ahmed, man. You had a lot of like you thought of Saw. You thought of Arkham Asylum. Like, how was that whole segment working for you?
I thought of Arkham
plan, right? When they went 3D.
First I thought of Arkham not in that scene, but when Moriarty went to visit her. It was like the Joker going to visit someone in Arkham. That's the feeling I got. But in that specific scene that you're talking about, and it's beginning when he snuck in to see his sister, I got a very Bruce Wayne sneaky way going in to see someone where he's not supposed to, and he's not wearing his bat suit. That's the vibe I got. But the second when she said to him, "Let me show you," and they touched hand and stuff like this, I think a part of me died because of that. I was like, who the fuck are you trying to fool? Like, seriously? There's no glass? Like, what the fuck, dude? Like, you know.
I was also a bit like.
This hurt my feelings, dude.
I just also felt like, how come Sherlock hasn't figured this out? Like, he's. So...
Yeah, right? Like, it was, like, cheated in this scene on different levels, dude. Yeah. Like in so many different levels. There were frames dividing the glass. Yeah. I saw frames dividing that shit. None of it makes sense.
It is a shock, like, oh my god, what the fuck happened here, like, how did she pull this off, you know? So there's this initial shock, but again, when you stop and think about it, it just makes no sense.
It was kind of like the nod to Ringu, right, when she comes out of the screen.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, especially with the hair and all. So maybe that's something that they were going for. I do like when the moments that Watson figures something else out and nobody else does. I do like those kind of moments. And he kind of figures out that Art Malik is under the whatever it is, whatever superpower Eurus apparently has. Like, they don't really explain it, but she reprograms people or something like that. You only need a few minutes. But again, it felt very Silence of the Lamb, where, you know, Hannibal Lecter makes his psychologist swallow his own tongue and that kind of thing, you know? So that's what it made me think of more than anything. So then we have the big arrival of Moriarty on scene. And it kind of the reveal that, you know, they were in cahoots, damn it. I was happy to see Andrew Scott again on screen, and again it was a kind of a big shock more than anything. And I think they kind of played really well with the timeline, with this zipping back and forth, because it does almost feel that it's happening in the now, you know.
That's what you mean.
So. They do go for maximum effect, and that's really fun. And I do love that effect that they have, where when Eurus and Mike Moriarty are talking, then you clearly see that there is glass between them, because they play with the reflection, and when they start touching each other, you know, the face of Eurus becomes kind of Mycroft and that Moriarty. That I thought was really cool. It was a bit on the nose. I thought it was a nice visual, you know, an empty visual again, but with no payoff, but a nice visual. And then I think we get into the tasks, right? This is where I fell asleep while I was taking notes, so I don't exactly know the sequence of events that happened now, but
I have got a question regarding the whole overlap of Moriarty and Eurus. Yeah. So does it mean that Eurus was successful to completely manipulate Moriarty's actions? So everything that Moriarty did that resulted, Moriarty did to Sherlock and eventually his suicide was all put in his head by Eurus. So Eurus instructed him to kill himself.
Maybe you guys want to give it a shot first. Armin, what do you think?
It's what I was thinking.
Yeah, that's also exactly what I leaned towards, and that's what pissed me off about, like, why you take this character from me. Like, I saw as Moriarty was nothing but a puppet, and everything that we have been watching was the doing of his sister, so kind of didn't like that, honestly.
So you meant... you mean that Eurus put in his head to kill himself, or just
the entire whole elaborate plan of what to do?
I don't know. I felt more that it was Moriarty was kind of always up for some mischief, and Eurus kind of gave him a new idea or some new adversary to kind of match wits with. But again, it just. Like, yeah, the whole setup of, you know, just in 5 minutes, and she's so strong that she can kind of take over or put an idea in Moriarty's brain that wasn't there initially. It like you said, Armin, man, it weakens Moriarty as a character, and that is kind of a shame. And again, it has no payoff necessarily, right? I did feel kind of that was a bit of a shame.
The thing that how did Mycroft get in touch with Moriarty, and what kind of relationship do they share that Mycroft can say, like, Moriarty, come on, visit my sister?
I think they mentioned that, though, that they were keeping an eye on him, but they have no proof to kind of pick him up. Like, the British government needs, you know, proof to lock people up or whatever, you know? Like, what kind of world are we living in, you know? But, they kind of give like an answer like they did with the gunshot, and then they just kind of move on with the plot and, you know, look at this shiny thing, you know, which pretty much was kind of what they were doing in this episode. But I think they start then, Sherlock kind of realizes that the girl is in the plane, because he hears the audio, right?
Yeah.
And they get locked up, and then the governor's wife has the whole Saw situation going on.
Yeah.
So the tasks start. They have like three tasks, I think, that they have to kind of perform. So just overall, how did you... Because that felt very Saw-ish, right? That whole part. Let's just go through all three of them. Were there any favorite ones, or were there any... So the first one is that... or Mycroft or Watson has to shoot the governor, or his governor's wife gets shot. Second one is with the coffin, that they have to make Molly say "I love you," and that's kind of the password. And three is then the little girl, right? Am I missing anything?
Three is the three guys hanging out from the...
Oh, fuck. Yeah, the three guys.
Yeah, okay.
Completely inconsequential. So, and then the fourth is then the overarching one is the girl, and that's kind of what they put against the timer in a way that this plane will crash if they don't solve it.
And then move to some other location. Yeah. Some
flashbacks, right?
No, there's like a gap of a couple of hours because Sherlock and John and Mycroft, I don't know where, but they have been moved to some other location. Where Watson has been chained under the well.
All right, that happens too. Yeah. So I think let's get into spoiler, because I don't think we can talk about any of this if we don't, you know, go into the spoiler section. So now
I think we milk it for too long.
Yeah, let's just go full hog now, if needed. So I know if you haven't seen it, stop here, listening and watch the episode, or otherwise, keep on listening. What did you think of the 3-4 tasks that they had to perform? Martin, what about you?
I mean, did I like them? Yeah. Were they imaginative and creative? Yeah. But I think the kind of...
Which was your favorite? Which one was your favorite?
Oh, the three brothers.
Hmm.
Just because they all got killed.
Yeah. And also because Sherlock had to deduce something more than anything. I thought that was really cool, you know?
Yeah, I just think I think fatigue had set in by then, and I think I'd started caring a lot less.
Yeah.
So
even Martin, with the best of will, was at this point, he was giving up on this episode. What about you, Amon?
Well,
I just didn't feel the
tension build.
Mm. Yeah.
Satisfactorily.
Amon, what about you? Which was your favorite task out of the?
I think my favorite task was probably the first. Which one of them he had to shoot, Mycroft or Watson? But I liked it, I think, for odd reasons. Just because throughout the episode, Watson has been telling him, "Today we're soldiers. Today we're soldiers. Today we're soldiers," and they completely switch roles, and they did an amazing acting job in it. Out of nowhere, Sherlock became the soldier. He decided to sacrifice himself, and Watson became Sherlock in the sense that he puzzled it together and he figured out which path his answer is. Like, I see what's happening. So I think just because of that, that was my favorite task.
Yeah, and Martin Freeman's performance, man, again,
I've raved on it every
episode, but he has like this one key scene in it, and he just again knocks it out of the park. He's so good. So, man, what about you? Which one of the three, four tasks did you like the most?
I don't know if I have a favorite task, but I know which one's my least favorite, and that's the one with the three people hanging outside the window, and they had to kill. And Sherlock is just mumbling through that entire thing, trying to deduce which one of them is the killer. And I just gave up at that point. Like, I don't give a fuck about these people. I don't give a fuck about what Sherlock is mumbling about, and also, like, Eurus and her motive of, does it feel different to kill innocent people and all that whole serial killer vibe, I just couldn't buy into it, and I just didn't... I don't care for this character at all, even though she's Sherlock's sister. No, it doesn't really matter to me.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, I think the first task...
I mean, she's a fine one to talk, because she killed somebody innocent when she was, like, 10.
So many people.
Also, the fact that, you know, when Sherlock is about to kill himself in the final task, when he can't decide whom to shoot, she shoots Sherlock and Watson with the darts, yeah? With the tranquilizer darts.
Mm.
But what was the point in sending the drone to kill them all in the flat then?
These kind of questions, like that's why I'm saying, like, when you start thinking about it, like, they were out for hours, and she hired a container, and she flew over Sherlock to his where he grew up, and then all the while, Watson was in a well, like. How does that even make sense? Like, how does she even, you know, do this? And all the while all of this is happening, she's just waiting in her childhood bedroom, right? That's what happened?
Yeah, so she, after setting it all up, she goes back in the room and then, you know, so her illusion of her being the little girl is on pause. And then when she goes back to the room, she hits the play button again and she's back into the whole destination world.
Yeah. And I did like that during that segment, or even a bit earlier, I think near the third problem, because Sherlock kind of figures out he has no patience for the little girl on the phone. He's like, yeah, whatever. We're doing some other thing now, you know?
Cause he's got that feeling too, to be honest.
Yeah. Cause
we're doing some grown-up shit now.
Yeah, because he'd figured out...
problems.
Yeah, I think he'd figured out by then that, you know, there was no girl. There is no plane that can fly for hours on end and, you know, nobody's figured that out. So finally he got to that point. just a little thing, because, again, this is what I do. I got to talk a bit about Molly. I liked that part. I felt her performance was, again, amazing of that actress. You know, just Sherlock pushing her to that point. But again, it's just... Yeah, it's meaningless, you know. It's meaningless, and B, it puts this character through such an emotional whirlwind, and there's no real payoff, you know. It's not like she ends up on the they don't walk away together or have a relationship, or Sherlock, he doesn't call her back and tell her, you know, oh, it was just for a task, we were about to die, you know. It's just completely consequential. This character gives the kind of the biggest confession she can emotionally. And for, you know, like for 4 years, 5 years, she's been waiting for, you know, Sherlock to tell her that he loves her. And it's, again, it's just like, okay, that's it. Okay, it was just a code. We're done. Moving to this next room, you know. Okay, he
so
does.
Asim, have you rewatched the episode completely now?
No, I watched it till the governor scene, and then I kind of fell asleep, so that's where I kind of gave up.
I think somebody pointed out, like, in the end when they have that kind of a showreel where with Mary's narration from the DVD, they kind of show that what happens in the near future. So there is a scene where Molly is kind of happy and she just smiles at Sherlock or something, so they kind of reconcile.
That went by really quickly.
Yeah, it was just swept up, you know.
In the closing montage.
Okay, well, that's at least something, where even though I missed it. And you know me, Martin, I keep my eye on Molly.
I don't know if Isa knows that.
Why is that, Asim? Can you explain?
I just like her, man. She seems like a nice person. She, like, of all of the people around in this show, I think I like nice people, man.
She's very vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah. Brunettes with hair up, it's just my thing, man. It's like my wife. So I think I'll need your help here, because I don't think I understand it completely. So in her childhood, so the red beard reveal is that there was no red beard, it wasn't his dog. So all the while Mycroft is talking about this dog, there never was a dog. Sherlock had created a dog, and it was his best friend, and she killed or drowned his best friend, but the parents knew that she had hidden the best friend, but they couldn't make her talk, and then she burned the house down, and then she's locked in a plane, or, like, how does that work? Like, can any of you explain what exactly happened?
But you're pretty much
she's not in a plane.
But mentally she's in a plane.
Yeah.
Right. Like Nirvana, we're on a plane, that kind of thing. My references.
Some things to do, but okay.
My references this week are not on point, man. You're not getting me.
So I think that what they were saying is that when she's in the plane, she's in control, but she can't bring the plane down because she will lose control.
Amazing.
And bringing the plane down is.
But she needs her brother to bring the plane down. Is that it? Or because there's also this thing about you never.
Well, that's what he told her. So
who put her in the plane? Like mentally, is it Mycroft?
She did. No, she did.
Who put Pavey in the corner? Huh.
That's the only place where she felt safe as such.
The plane.
But what was happening to her physically then? After she burnt down the house. How old was Mycroft when he arranged for Sharon Ford and her to be imprisoned there?
Immediately after.
You're going to have to really. You're going to have to ask much more straightforward questions than that, Sujoy.
Yeah.
Don't ask me to get out my magnifying glass and put on my Deerstalker now.
No, I think she went into Sharon Ford this maximum. Prison after killing the kid and burning down the house. And then she burned down Sherringford, I think. And then he told the parents that she died in a fire. Or maybe it's after that point that he put her in Sherringford.
who the fuck cares?
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. It's... Like, also the whole plane setup, because the whole reveal is that she's flying the plane around him, right? And she has the plane in her hand, like a blue plane, and that makes him think she's stuck on a plane or something. Like, there's a visual connect there, but it doesn't... I don't understand how it works with reality. And, like, if she's on...
It's just a metaphor. Yeah. And then she just makes that vocal by pretending to be a 6-year-old girl. And so the challenge is that he has to get through to her that it's okay. You don't need to crash the plane, i.e. wipe out everybody, kill me, kill Watson, kill everybody. I'm your brother, I will help you land the metaphor, i.e. the plane, and we will do it calmly and together, and then we can be reconciled, and then we can play the violin together, and then...
Oh yeah, the violin, they have the violin do it that they had, yeah, okay. It didn't work. I feel kind of dirty just listening to that explanation. I need a shower or something. Okay.
So, I didn't even give the most eloquent explanation of it. But
no, but it's better than what the show
did.
But
you see where the problems that I have with this thing lie. It just, in terms of why have you made it so kind of like convoluted, and why have the writers done this and done that? And I would have been happy with just a few episodes based around the stories from the books.
I agree on that.
Yeah, and then...
And do you know what I mean? It's kind of...
Yeah, I mean, in Mary's...
I wouldn't say up its own ass, but they made it relatively contrived.
Yeah, in Mary's, like, narration, you see Sherlock and Watson going out and, solving many cases in the background.
Yeah, that was in the second episode, right?
Narration. In this episode, right?
Yeah. And in the previous ones well, I think, somewhere. But those would have been more interesting than this overarching story of...
What did you think of the epilogue with Mary reappearing on a DVD?
Well, she had a lot of time in her hand to prepare for her death.
Like, clearly, if I want to keep a message that has to be, be indestructible, I would put it on a DVD, right? Like, clearly, that's the format you choose, right?
Of course.
The thing is, it's amazing that Watson actually feels like he's got the intellectual capacity to get out of bed in the morning. His wife is a fucking superstar. The person he solves crimes with is, like, more intellectually gifted. His brother, in turn, is considered only remarkable and is only, like, heading up the British Internal Secret Service. And yet, the two of them have a sister who's so brilliant that she even outshines Moriarty. I'm sure Watson should have just topped himself at the fucking hopelessness of his own existence by comparison to that of those around him.
No, imagine if he banged her.
More interesting.
Because actually she didn't even get out once. She got out twice, right? And on the bus to seduce Watson, and then she also got out to do the whole walk in the park and have chips with Sherlock.
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, anyway. So, yeah, what did you think that... Was that kind of a poem that Mary recited, or was that My Baker Street Boys or something like that? I just did not get...
That just her being selfish, wanting to put her print on something.
Hmm. Yeah, you don't like her.
No, I hate her. I hate her. She had to fucking appear again in the last episode. My Baker Street Boys is like, bitch, they belong to everyone.
Yeah, it felt really, really weird. And I was reading the the interview with Stephen Moffat, and he was saying how this is how they've now become the Sherlock and Watson that we know. But I just didn't feel that was true.
And it's ended now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so...
Also, somebody should make, like, Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman dressed all, like, white, and make, like, a Backstreet Boys tribute band poster with Baker Street Boys underwritten under
yeah,
it.
Yeah, see?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think...
See, we're all fatigued by it.
Yeah.
And we're all sort of like tetchy with each other about it. It's like the ghost of Moriarty is poisoning us against Sherlock. I don't like that. I think the writers could have done better for our sake.
They should like make a spin-off with just Moriarty and his mischievous tasks.
Yeah.
And Andrew Scott like just kicking ass episode after episode.
Yeah. So it's a bit bad that he was in like one of the most terrible Sherlock James Bond's like Spectre.
Yeah.
I thought he was kind of a really cool character. He could have done more, you know, kind of been a good foil to M and all that. But yeah, they kind of nixed that one too.
Yeah. Bit of a shame.
Yeah.
But you know, I still love the whole thing to bits. I think it was very good.
Yeah.
Things just kind of recreate and reimagine. But I think we've all kind of agreed that it sort of started dissolving a bit sometime after the second series had finished.
Yeah. But yeah, I think we're kind of done talking about this episode, right?
Yeah.
But final question. If there was a next season, would you be excited for it, or would you look forward? Would you even want one? Maybe that's a better question. I think we've kind of answered it, but what about you, Ahmed? Would you want another season, or a movie, or a one-off Christmas special? How would you? If
maybe
you would
wanna... like 2, 3, 4 years when I miss it like fucking crazy, I wouldn't mind a special. But I think they really tied everything that there is no coming back now.
Yeah. What about you, Martin? I think you already kind of mentioned it, right?
Yeah, I think I've made myself pretty plain on this one. I mean, I think, to be honest, the BBC would do really well. I know it would be massively don't do it now, but at some point in the near future, maybe by the end of the year, they could do a lot worse than just do all of them back to back.
Yeah.
Just to get and then everybody kind of like has it in their head. Yes. And then, yeah, do you know what? If you want to bring it back, happy days. You know, I'll still tune in. I'll still watch it. Still love it to bits. Mm. But, yeah, you don't need to make it as sort of overarching and as sort of convoluted and contrived as all that. And I think it's a very good thing that you said earlier about somehow, you know, on occasions just feeling like the writer's kind of like cheated and sort of took the piss out of you a bit.
Yeah. What about you, Sujoy? Final words?
Yeah, I would still watch it. It's one of the, like, stylistically, it's one of the best TV shows there is, with, you know, special effects or how the way it's edited and all
like
that.
Like, in the world, it's one of the best shows, right? Like, it's
yeah,
like
it is.
Top, yeah, for sure.
And that's why I like the way House of Cards does texting, all of that is started off in Sherlock, right? And Sherlock did much better. In those terms, yes, I would be excited to see another episode of Sherlock were there to make it, but I'm not keen to watch it like straight away, and I don't think they will be making, because obviously both of them are quite successful in doing whatever they want to do right now. Do you guys watch Elementary?
I do. I kind of enjoy it, actually.
I haven't really started watching it, so do you recommend me watching, and what to expect from it coming from watching Sherlock?
Yeah, I like it. It took me a while to get into it, but I really started appreciating it. It's what Ahmed calls sandwich shows. And I really love that term. It's just like a show you watch while having a sandwich. It's pretty self-explanatory.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And it doesn't require your full attention, but the overarching story and the character and the performance just hooks you in. Like, in a way, The Good Wife did. You watched The Good Wife, right?
Yes, I did.
It's very similar in that way, that it's really quality of that kind of you know, television show that's like 22 episodes, so it's very long, but it has more than, you know, some other network episodes. So it's not as good as Good Wife. I'm not saying that, But it's still a good show if you're
Like, it has 22 episodes, so it can play around with character building and stuff rather than be getting 3 episodes every 2 years, and there's still filler episodes to worry about.
And I do like that there's like so 3 very different iterations of Sherlock Holmes. I kind of like that, you know. None of these 3 are the same at all. Like in Elementary, I like the fact that Lucy Liu is playing Watson, that it's a female character, also an Asian female, which is also kind of adds to, you know, diversity and just kind of a different view of the story. I really appreciate it. I like Lucy Liu. And they also play a lot with Sherlock's addiction. And that's something that's not addressed as much in this show or in the Guy Ritchie version. So that he's really a drug addict and he's an alcoholic and he has a lot of things like close to autism or something like that, you know? He's like a savant. So those kind of elements is really cool in Elementary, I feel. So yeah, I would recommend it. I would recommend it. But like any of those shows, you need to give it a bit, like 5-6 episodes to see if you're really into it or not. But it's good. It's good.
Yeah.
And amazing. Just for that reason, you should watch it. Marjorie Tyrell is playing is playing Irene Adler in Elementary. So I sold you, right? And she is amazing, man. She is amazing, and I mean, we all love her, right? So just seeing her kind of in a contemporary villainous kind of role, she's really good in it. She's not that much in it, but she's when she comes up.
Is Moriarty also there in Elementary?
Is Moriarty in it? Actually, no, I don't think he is. Is he?
All right.
Yeah, he's not.
Oh, you mean Natalie Dormer? Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Marjorie Tyler. Yes, I've been watching it for so long now. I actually forgot if Moriarty is in it or not. No, I don't think he is. I don't think he is. Okay. Not yet, at least. I got an IMDb this man. I'm recommending shit without fully knowing. It's good. I think if people have feel, and it's kind of like every episode is one contained mystery, which with Martin mentioned that he kind of missed in this. So those kind of things, if those things appeal to you, I would check it out. I know it's all available on Hulu. If you have access to Hulu, you can probably watch it all.
Okay. Cool. No, I don't have access to Hulu, but anyway, I'll try to check it out.
Yeah, you can find it, I'm sure. They also show it on British TV, but I don't know on which channel or which time, because nobody watches terrestrial TV anymore, except when it's Sherlock. So, guys, where can people find more of you online? Amin, maybe, first?
It will be at Ahmed Tweeting.
Great. And Martin?
I'm just at Martin Cawley on Twitter. You can find me there. Hit me up.
Sujoy?
At the rate 93k on Twitter, Instagram, and I create memes and gifs on Bollypop.in.
You got anything new coming up that you want to plug or something?
No, not at the moment. I'm trying to be not lazy and probably get back to studying a bit for exams and stuff.
That's good, man.
Let's see. Yeah.
Good boy. And I'm Asim Verney. You can follow me on Twitter. You can follow us at upodcasting, or you can drop us an email at upodcasting@gmail.com. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or leave us a review or leave us a comment. I was, like I mentioned earlier, I was on Sujoy's Bollywood podcast. So if we have Bollywood listeners on this episode, check it out. It's a really cool conversation. We do like a year roundup of all of the Bollywood releases last year, which was fun. And so we'll be back with a new episode pretty soon. Thanks everybody for listening. Thank you.
Cheers.
Great.
Yes, man. Oi, Asim.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe there's fatigue across all of us, actually, for sure.
Yeah, just talking about Sherlock, I think we're kind of done. Like,
we haven't even started yet.
It's just like a Sujoy stepped in, we're just done. It's like, Sujoy, you take it over, we're tired.